online. Welcome to a new series, Halacha in Healthcare Settings, is I think the title that Ematai gave this. I just wanted to give an overall introduction, first of all, to what this is. When I was in Toronto, two different periods, I gave a weekly shiur in medical halacha to, it was primarily medical professionals, didn't have to be, in different shuls. And the way we did it was as a chabura, like I explained in the introductory email, which is to say, not a formal structured shiur, the way that a shiur normally is, but rather going through primary source, secondary source material, building towards what Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Avraham does in his Nishmas Avraham. So I was thinking that I would like to do something like that here, and then I had a conversation with Rabbi Shlomo Brody, who is an old friend, and he is now the director of Ematai. Ematai deals a lot with end-of-life issues, I think, primarily at this point. Formerly, they were the Halachic Organ Donor Society, and he asked me what I'm planning on giving, you know, here in West Hempstead, and I told him about this, and he asked a partner. So that's how this became a time of Dogwood Park, as well as Ematai. The plan is to work our way through the part of Shulchan Aruch called Orach Chaim, specifically, which deals with daily life, Shabbos, Yom Tov. We're going to be starting with the topic of the obligation to daven versus taking care of patients, working our way through the morning mitzvos, making a bracha if you're called away from a meal and you have to take care of patients, things like that. Eventually, of course, we're going to get into Shabbos, and that's just, you know, giant. And, you know, if we ever make it out of there, that'll be great. I have no particular pace in mind for this. As far as I'm concerned, it's dictated by the people who are participating. We go faster, we go slower, whatever works. I see more people have joined, so I'm just going to post the link in the chat again for the source sheet for anybody who didn't get it before. Just, you know, people should know who the Nishmas Avraham is. The author of the Nishmas Avraham, Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Abraham. He was born in Yerushalayim. He went to medical school in England, became a member of the Royal College of Physicians in England, came back to Israel in 1970, started working at Shari Tzedek, as well as doing medical research at Hebrew U and Hadassah Hospital, became the director of the Department of Internal Medicine B at Shari Tzedek. He's now retired. But I learned when I gave previous shiurim on Nishmas Avraham that he actually reads email and responds. So I hope he still does, because that was awesome. Like, questions would come up and I could just, you know, reach out to him. And that was great. Over the decades of his medical work at Shari Tzedek, he asked thousands of questions of Israel's leading authorities in medical halacha. All the big names, Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, Rabbi Yosef Shalom Eliashiv, Rabbi Yeshua Neuwirth, all of them. And he wrote a bunch of articles about it, but his crowning work is Nishmas Avraham. It's not the ideal way to learn halacha, in the sense that if a person wants to sit down and say, I'm learning halacha, so you start with the Psukim, and you go through the Gemara, and you go through the Rishonim, and you work your way ultimately to the end. But that's not what he's doing for you here. But he's very good at giving you an overview of an issue. And so what we're going to do is reverse engineer what he does by looking at the sources first that he's drawing on, and then seeing how that leads us to his conclusion. The Nishmas Avraham follows the structure of the Shulchan Aruch. So sometimes the connections between a particular section of Shulchan Aruch and his medical halacha issues are really clear. So like Orach Chaim Shin Chav Ches talks about medical care on Shabbos, and that's where you'll see all this stuff about medical care on Shabbos. Sometimes, on the other hand, it's really like, whoa, he's connecting two things that I would not have thought to connect. So as an example, in the laws of Shabbos, he talks about the issue of Boer, of sorting things on Shabbos. And he applies these laws to filtering urine for kidney stones and sorting test results. And you're like, oh, I guess that's connected. And so you end up getting all of these medical things that are either directly or tenuously connected to something in Shulchan Aruch. It's a great index at the end of it. As I mentioned in my introductory emails, there is an English version of Nishmas Avraham available for purchase from ArtScroll. I do not get a commission for saying that. I don't know how good it is. I've never used it. But you know, it's probably worth a look. on Hebrew Books, I sent you the link for the Hebrew Books edition of Nishmas Avram. It is, it's the second edition of Nishmas Avram. Here I made a mistake, which I'm going to be paying for as long as we do this series, but that's the way it goes. My version originally of Nishmas Avram was the first edition, which is terrible. It's almost unusable. So I knew I needed to get a new edition of it. I knew they had the second edition on Hebrew Books, so I said, well, let me be parallel to what they're, you know, you're going to have in the Shear. And then I saw that for the same price, I could get the new and improved third edition. So I said, oh, okay, so let me get the third edition. It probably has all the typos corrected and stuff. So I got the third edition, only to realize that my page numbers now will not match with everybody else's. So hopefully we'll manage it. It'll be okay. Yeah, if anybody wants to get the third edition, that's fine. We can use the second edition. That's also fine. I will be sending it out with, specifically listing the second edition page numbers for you. And unlike what I did on the source sheet this time, I'll actually give you the page number in the PDF as opposed to the page number in the book. And hopefully that will make things easier. Last notes on the series. First of all, God willing, this will be a weekly shiur, Monday nights, 7:30. If I hear from people that 7:30 is a terrible idea, I'm open to shifting the time. I always use 7:30 because in Toronto, pretty much that was the nighttime shiur time. So that's what I set up originally here. There will be an exception when I give five medical halacha shiurim on Monday nights across the year. One was last week, the one about Ozempic. So we'll pause this shiur for the Monday night, those Monday night shiurim. Also, God willing, Monday night, November 13th, I'm going to be in Israel and not really up for giving the shiur at 2:30 in the morning. So we're probably just going to skip that one, I think. This is free of charge. Recordings will be on yutorah.org, uploaded along with the source sheets, although not the Nishmas Avram, so you have to use that. But I do expect to send out the link once it's on YU Torah, and that way people who miss a week will be able to catch it. And finally, if you're not yet registered for the series, please make sure to register, because then you'll get all the source sheets in advance and all of that. Okay, with all of that introduction behind us, I will note what I said, I think, in my introductory email, which is I'm going to try to be interactive with those online as well as those who are here in the room. But, it can be a little challenging. So for those of you who are online, I'm going to ask you not to write things in the chat, because monitoring the chat as well as what people are saying online as well as what people are saying in the room is a challenge, and I don't want the distraction. So if you have something, you can use the hand up emoji or just call it out. Generally speaking, I'll look to the people in the room for questions and comments first, and then I will look to the people online and work that way. Okay? Questions and comments from anyone in the room? Those online? Okay, then let's get started. Thank you for bearing with me on that introduction. So our first topic is, as you see on the sheet, davening versus non-pikuach nefesh medical care. On the one hand, davening. On the other hand, taking care of a patient where it's not life-saving. And the reason why I stress where it's not life-saving is because where it's life-saving, this is a really easy question to answer, right? If you have a choice between davening and saving somebody's life, what do?
Save the life.
Thank you. There we go. That was easy. Susan, you're not even a doctor. You play one on Zoom. So that is absolutely 100% true. And here I will quote for you from the Nishmas Avram. So we're now at the first source on the sheet where it says Amud Sadivav. That's page 128 in the PDF of the Nishmas Avram. He's commenting on a line in the Shulchan Aruch, which says the following. You have it? The line in the Shulchan Aruch says you should always try to daven im hatzibur, with a minyan. V'im hu anus, but if somebody is anus, meaning they are compelled, they're not able to daven with the community, she'eino yachol lavo lebeis haknesses, if they can't come to shul, yechavein lehispalo b'shoah she'atzibur mispalim, at least you should daven at the same time that they're davening in shul. And that way you are somewhat apart. Then he goes on to say, and what if you can't, and so on. So on that line, the Nishmas Avram says the following. It's Seif Katan Beis on the sheet. you're now looking towards the bottom part, which is the Nishmas Avram. The top part is the Shulchan Aruch. So he says, anus. What does it mean for somebody to be anus? They're compelled. They can't daven at the same time as everybody else. Or the same place, I should say. Hainu shetash kocho, meaning somebody is feeling weak. Av she'eno chole, even if you're not ill. Meaning, what he's saying is, this is not directly relevant for us, but it's a good thing to know. A person who can't make it to shul, even if they're not ill, there's no diagnosis. It's just they feel really drained. They just drove 8 hours, and they're just exhausted, and they just can't make it to shul. That's an example of being anus, he says. And then he gets to the part that's relevant for us. Kosev Hagon Rav Chaim Pelagi. Rav Chaim Pelagi, a great halachic authority, and since we're starting Sephardic month here on Wednesday, one of the great Sephardi poskim of the last couple of hundred years, says, Rofei Shekaru Oso Letapel B'chola Sheyesh Bo Sakana. If a doctor is called to treat a patient who is dangerously ill, yesh bo sakana, that there is a danger, mutter lo latzeis mi beis hakneses, he's allowed to leave shul, afilu be'emtza tefila, even in the middle of davening, o kriyas ha-Torah, the middle of the Torah reading, normally one is not allowed to leave while laning is going on, nonetheless he does, ve'af im al yedei zeh, yavor zman ha-tefila, and even if, as a result, he will miss the time for davening. Venerally, that's the quote, Ad Kan Lashono, that's the end of the quote from Rav Chaim Pelagi. And then he says, Venerally, Shalorak Shemutter, he says, not only are you allowed to leave shul, which was the language of Rabbi Pelagi, Elagam Shechayav La'asos Kein. He says, you have to leave shul. This isn't like optional. You have to leave shul for that. V'chein Ra'isi B'shut Sitz Eliezer. And then he says, I saw that in the responsum of Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg. Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg was one of the great authorities in medical halacha in the latter part of the 20th century. For those who are not familiar, he had a shul that was across the street from Shari Tzedek Hospital. He was not officially the posek of Shari Tzedek Hospital. That was Rabbi Yitzchak Weiss, the Menchas Yitzchak. However, he was known as an expert, and a lot of the doctors from Shari Tzedek would ask him their questions. So his responses are written up in this set called Tzitz Eliezer. And he says, Nishmas Avram says, I saw in Tzitz Eliezer, sheyesh lo lahafsik b'chol gavna, that a person who is called to take care of somebody who is dangerously ill, whose life is in danger, should stop whatever he's doing. V'latzeis el hachola sheyesh bo sakana, and go to the patient who is dangerously ill, laseis lo atipul adarush, to give him whatever care is needed. V'hu hadin rofei b'beit hacholim, and the same thing is true for a doctor in the hospital, o ish hatzala, or somebody who works for hatzala, shenimtza be'emtza tfilas yudches, who is in the middle of shmona esrei, o be'emtza kriyas ha-Torah, he's in the middle of Torah reading, v'shomea tziftzuf shal hamachshir kriyas shalo, and he hears his pager go off. Tzarech lahafsik miyad misafek, he says, you stop because of the doubt, I don't know what it is, because it's quite possible that this is a summons to take care of somebody who is in fact dangerously ill. And he is allowed to walk in front of people who are davening on his way out, even though we try to avoid walking in front of somebody who's in Shemona Esrei. In this case, do it. Just do it. That's the way it works. And then I found out the other problem with the third edition is that they did not correct all the typos. The rest of the line there, he says, see the discussion he's going to have in Kuf Yud Dalet Beis, it's actually Kuf Dalet Beis, it's not Kuf Yud Dalet Beis. So typos are still here. I'm making a list. We'll send it to him. Okay. So this is really just background. Our main discussion is you're taking care of somebody whose life is not in danger. I just wanted to get that out of the way. Like, we're very clear. Life is in danger. Do not pass go, or do pass go, I guess. Don't bother with the $200. You come back for it later. But do pass go. The bigger question is, I'm not saving a life, but I'm taking care of patients, and the time of davening comes up. Right? I'm seeing patients in my office. Right? We have neurology, we have psychiatry, we have different specialties. You can all conjure up, you know, whatever is associated with your particular practice. What happens at that stage when you have patients to take care of, and it's also going to be either time for minyan or just time for davening. Flat out time for davening. You know, we're getting to the clock change coming up next week, and the latest time to daven mincha is going to be 4 something, and, you know, stuff goes on. I mean, one of the cases that they talk about, which we'll eventually get to in the Nishmas Avram, you could have a case in which a surgery begins at, let's say, 10 in the morning, and it's going to keep you occupied until after the latest time to daven mincha. You know, you don't have the option of saying, I'll daven mincha and then do the surgery. So now what's your status? And it's not as simple as saying, oh, I guess that I am exempt, because it still leads to questions. You missed the time for davening. Normally, if I miss the time of davening for a good reason, what's the halacha? Tashlumin. I daven Shmoneh Esrei twice for the next davening, right? So the question here is, do I even have to do that? I didn't miss this like I was obligated and I forgot. I was exempt because I was taking care of patients. So maybe there's no law of making it up at all, right? Another of the questions that we'll have to discuss is, what about women as opposed to men? Because the obligation to daven Maariv is different for men than for women. And that affects the question of doing a makeup davening as well, as we'll see. So, like, they're even just saying, well, you're taking care of people, so therefore you're exempt, does not actually solve all of the problems. So in order to analyze this, we need to start by seeing some sources that relate to a concept which you see in the heading on your sheet, Osek b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. We're going to be spending most of our time for the rest of this year. By the way, I don't think anybody asked me. I had assumed 7:30 to 8:30. That was my assumption. No one actually asked me when this ends. That's a good sign, right? But that was my assumption. So we're going to be spending the bulk of our time just on background sources to get us to the practical results. But Osek b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah means what? Right. If you're occupied in doing a mitzvah, you are exempt from responsibility for other mitzvahs. And this comes up in the Gemara in quite a few different contexts, of which we're going to see some. The first case we're going to look at is what's called Pruta de Rav Yosef. And I'm going to explain it outside, and then we'll see it in the Gemara in source base. You come across something that somebody lost that you think they'd want back. You have a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, right? You're supposed to restore it to them. What if it's an item that needs to be taken care of, right? It's not like you found their tennis ball in the gutter and, you know, you just want to pick it up and get it back to them at some point. But you found their chicken. I don't know. Something that requires some upkeep. So you're going to take it into your house, maybe not the chicken, but something else, and you're going to look after it. Does that mean that you are engaged in pursuit of a mitzvah, the mitzvah of restoring lost property, and therefore you're exempt from other mitzvahs? The answer is maybe, indeed. And that leads to the following very interesting formulation from Rav Yosef. In halacha, when you guard somebody else's property, you have certain responsibilities. Your level of responsibility for the property depends on how much benefit you are getting from that property versus how much benefit you are providing for the owner of that property. So, for example, if I rent something from somebody, I'm benefiting because I get to use it, but on the other hand, I'm paying for it. I have less responsibility because I'm paying for it. On the other hand, if I borrow something from somebody, then I'm getting all the benefit. The owner of it's getting nothing. Therefore, I have a higher degree of responsibility. Or somebody asks me to guard something for them, so then I have the least responsibility because I'm doing them a favor. I'm guarding it for free. So Rav Yosef makes a very interesting argument. I find somebody's chicken. I'm looking after the chicken for them. I'm not being paid to do so, right? However, in the event that somebody comes to my door and wants tzedakah, I am able to say to that person, sorry, I'm involved in a mitzvah right now. I'm looking after their chicken. Therefore, I don't actually have an obligation to help you. That's legit. Like, you could say that, according to Rabbi Yosef. And therefore, he says, you are like a paid guardian, a shomer sachar, because you are profiting from what you're doing. Is that clear? First, those in the room, and then I'll ask those online.
You're a shomer sachar because you don't have to give the guy a stuck.
Yep.
That's your payment.
That's wild, huh?
Can you repeat that so we can hear it?
Yeah, no, he just restated. That was Michael. this is Susan asking. Michael restated what I said. You are considered to be a paid guardian, because if somebody comes to your door, you will not be obligated to give them tzedakah. Therefore, you are profiting.
What about actual attention?
Ah, good. So Jeffrey asks, but you could theoretically do both mitzvahs, right? I mean, really, how much work are you investing? You know, in Alana says also, how much work are you investing in guarding this chicken that you can't pull out the checkbook and, you know, give somebody something? So we're going to get to that. Take a look at source base. Itmar, it was taught. Shomer Aveda, somebody who is guarding a lost item. Rabba Amar Kishomer Chinam Dami. So Rabba says, you are like somebody who is guarding someone else's property for free. You're not being paid, and therefore you have very little liability for it because you're just being a nice person. Rabbi Yosef Amar Kishomer Sachar Dami. Rabbi Yosef says, no, you are like somebody who is being paid to guard it. Rabba Amar Kishomer Chinam Dami. Rabba says, you are like somebody who is guarding it for free, because my hana kamati lei, because what benefit do you get? You're just doing the mitzvah. The mitzvah itself is not called your benefit. That's a basic principle. Mitzvahs are not considered to be a monetary benefit. Rabbi Yosef amar kashomer sachar dami. Rabbi Yosef says, no, you are like a paid guardian. Behahi hana'a delo baya lemesvele rifta la'anya havi kashomer sachar. Because of the benefit that you don't have to give bread to a pauper, that makes you a paid guardian. That's the idea. There's more in the discussion in the Gemara. I paused, you know, the part that I was bringing, but it's brought as halacha. If you take a look at source Gimel, this is from the SMA. SMA is an acronym for Sefer Me'iras Einayim. It is a standard commentary to the part of the Shulchan Aruch that deals with financial issues, Choshen Mishpat. And he says in source Gimel, Kedin Shomer Sachar, like the rule of a Shomer Sachar, paid guardian. Plukta bazeh b'gemara, he says that's a debate in the Gemara, that's what we just saw in our Gemara. Ika lamanda amar dahava alei shomer sachar, there are those who say you are a paid guardian. Mishum dechayev letapel ba'aveda, because you have to take care of the lost object. Binir v'shituach haksus shlo tiskalkel, let's say it's clothing, so you have to shake it out, you have to hang it up nicely, you have to make sure that it doesn't get ruined. Ubishara Veda Gamkin call echa kafitzarcha, and with other lost objects, similarly, each type, you know, whatever its needs are. Kumosha Kasava Tur Vamachaber Basif Mishacharze, as continues as is brought in other sections in the Shulchan Aruch. Ubizman Shaosek Bitikun Ha'aveda on the third line in Gimel. Ubizman Shaosek Bitikun Ha'aveda. While you're involved in taking care of the lost object, and there's your answer, Jeffrey, right? While you're involved in taking care of the lost object, if a pauper comes looking for tzedakah or bread, you're exempt from giving it to him. One who is involved in a mitzvah is exempt. And that's his payment, his exemption. That's the idea. And then he goes on to say, there are those who disagree because they say, how common is it that while you're working on taking care of this, that's when the pauper is showing up? Are you really a Shomer Sachar? But their disagreement is about the Shomer Sachar category. They're not disagreeing about the exemption. In the event that you're taking care of the object and somebody comes to your door while you're doing that, the answer is you're exempt. That's the statement. So this is a source which would seem to indicate the person who is looking after the object is in fact, the doctor who is actually taking care of patients is going to be exempt from davening at that point, right? That's what it sounds like.
So you feed the chicken at the time, you don't have to answer the door.
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
Rabbi?
Yes, Susan?
Aren't certain mitzvot, like helping Ani, more, I don't want to say more important, I don't know what exact adjective to use, but have more value than taking care of a chicken, especially since you can do both. Like, isn't there a matter of common sense? If I can do both, then I shouldn't let this poor person go hungry.
Right. So the question of whether you can do both is the one that Jeffrey was asking about. Right now, the assumption is you can't, but we are going to discuss that, where you're able to do both. I mean, spoiler alert, the answer is if you can do both, you should do both. But it's not necessarily for you to say that the pauper's needs override the needs of the owner of the chicken. You know, if you owned the chicken, you might not feel that way. You have to be careful about that kind of an evaluation. It's not straightforward.
It doesn't mean you can't give the honey stuck later.
Right, and Jeffrey says, you know, you could give him a check later on. You can give him money later on. I mean, assuming it's not that he's, you know, needed bread and he's going to pass away if he doesn't get it. Yes.
I was going to say, isn't there a hierarchy? Like, I don't know if that's the adjective.
Right.
This is a specific example that we're learning that he's using.
Right. So Dina asks, maybe there should be a hierarchy. The truth is that there are hierarchies. It's true. So, you know, a lota asse, a prohibition, will override an asse. An act of commandment. So there is such a thing. But within the mitzvos asay, it's not so, like, you know, especially because this is here first. Okay. This is what you're already engaged in, and there's a certain primacy of just having been there first.
Let's use the chicken as an example.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm feeding my chicken. The chicken's not going to die.
Not your chicken, someone else's chicken.
Someone else's chicken. Yeah. I'm feeding the chicken. The chicken's not going to die if it's tail down and answer the doorbell.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do very fine by coming back 2 minutes later and deciding.
Yeah, so this is going to, all of this comes to the Efshar L'Kayim Shnei, and what if you can do both? I'm going to come back to it. So let's go a little further in the sources, because I think all the questions are really around this question of...
Can I ask this one thing, please?
Yeah.
Going back to the doctor thing.
Yes.
If you see somebody coming to your door and he looks really hungry, wouldn't that supersede, like you think he's going to faint? Wouldn't that supersede?
So... Yes, the answer is yes. In the same way that when we started the shiur, I read from the Nishmas Avram, right? He said that in the event that you are davening and you get a call, you stop davening and answer the call. We don't say, well, I'm in the middle of davening, so therefore that overrides this other mitzvah. So clearly, yes, there is a hierarchy, and life and death will be at the top of the hierarchy. That is correct. Yes, we are assuming providing patient care is a mitzvah. That's not something I was going to go into now, but we have numerous sources both for the mitzvah of saving a life and for patient care where it's not life-saving. Right? The classic source where it's not life-saving is V'hashevo Solo. The Torah has a mitzvah. We've been talking about it for the last however long. The mitzvah of returning a lost item. So the Torah says, you shall restore... Literally, vashevo solo, you shall restore it to him, the object to the owner, or you could translate it the way the Sifri does, you shall restore him to him. You are restoring him to himself, from which we get the idea that restoring a person's property includes restoring their health to them. Restoring someone's health is part of the mitzvah of hashavas aveda, and therefore, you have that as your responsibility, even if you're not talking about a life and death case. That's one source among many that you can bring. There's a Rashi in Sanhedrin, V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. We still believe in that one. So, like, we have sources that indicate that we have a mitzvah of, you know, taking care of the person's health. Leah is raising her hand. You have to know, the last time Leah raised her hand in a class of mine was 1998, I think. Where are
you? That's about right.
I think that's about right. Yeah, New England Academy of Torah. Go ahead.
Just asking that if you could repeat the questions in the room into the microphone so we can hear them, please.
Yeah, I'm trying to. That wasn't an issue back then. Okay.
Zoom wasn't a thing back then.
That is also true. Not even Skype. All right, so that's one Gemara that teaches us that Osik b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah, somebody who is involved in a mitzvah, is exempt from other mitzvot. Second one is a Gemara in Sukkah, which is going to raise additional complications for us. Source, Dalet. Mishnah says, Shluchei mitzvah, peturin min ha-sukkah. People who are engaged in pursuing a mitzvah are exempt from fulfilling Sukkah. Okay? Fine. Gemara asks, Menohani mili. How do you know that? Ditanu Rabbanan, because I have a brisa. In which we learn the Torah says, "Beshivtecha b'veisecha," right? You're supposed to recite Shema, "Beshivtecha b'veisecha," when you are lying down in your house, prat la'osek b'mitzvah. That excludes somebody who's involved in a mitzvah, meaning if you're sitting at home, you have to say Shema. But if you're engaged in a mitzvah, you do not have the obligation to say Shema. That's the initial statement in the Gemara. And then it goes on to discuss cases in which someone might in fact be exempt from Shema because they're engaged in performing a mitzvah. And then the Gemara says, wait, you got it from Shema? V'ha'osek b'mitzvah patur min ha'mitzvah mehacha nafka? You think that's where we learn it from? Mehasam nafka. We learn it from a different source. Disanya, it's a different brisa on a different subject. It's talking about Pesach Sheni. We know that to bring the Korban Pesach, a person has to be tahor. They have to be ritually eligible. The first time when we were in the Midbar, we were supposed to bring the Korban Pesach, there were some people who could not do so. Right? Then they go to Moshe and they say, hey, what about us? Why can't we bring the Korban Pesach? And they end up getting Pesach Sheni 1 month later. And everybody talks as though they got to do what they wanted to do, but of course they didn't get to do what they wanted to do. They wanted to bring it with everybody else. They didn't want to bring it a month later. So they got some of what they wanted. Life's like that. In any case, the point is, by what right do they make themselves impure? They had a mitzvah of bringing the Korban Pesach. Who told them to make themselves tameh? So that's the passage. Desanya, the brisa goes as follows. Vahi anashim asher hayu tmeim lenefesh adam. The Torah says in Parshas Baaloscha Bamidbar, chapter 9 or so. There were people who were tameh, impure from contact with the dead. Osam anashim mihayu. Who were these people? Nosei arono shel Yosef hayu, divar Rabbi Yosi Aglili. Rabbi Yosi Aglili says they were the people who were carrying Yosef's casket. Right, we know that when they leave Egypt, they take Yosef's bones with them. Someone's carrying it, and they are tameh because of that. That's the first answer. Rabbi Yosi Aglili says that. Right, the bones of the others, but those aren't explicit in the Chumash.
Yeah,
the Medrash says that the other ones are there also. But the Gemara is interested in bringing you a pasuk. Rabbi Akiva gives a different answer. Rabbi Akiva Omer Mishael ve'el Tzafan hayu. It was Mishael and El Tzafan. Shayu Oskim ben Nadav Avihu, who were taking care of Nadav and Avihu. Remember the terrible story? Aaron's two sons, Nadav and Avihu, die when they dedicate the Mishkan in the beginning of the month of Nisan. And they are taken care of by Mishael and El Tzafan, their first cousins. So so Mishael and El Tzafan are now Tameh. Rabbi Yitzchak Omer, Rabbi Yitzchak says, Im nosei arono shel Yosef hayu kvar hayu chalun litaher. I don't understand. The people who were taking care of Yosef's casket, so let them, you know, make themselves pure beforehand. The assumption is that at this point in the Midbar, we already had Para Aduma, even though that won't be recorded until Parshas Chukas. But otherwise, how in the world would they make themselves pure? We don't have a process. So they must know how to do it, and that's what they should have done. And if it's Mishael and El Tzafan, Yechol and Hayu Yitar, they could purify themselves. Ella Oskin b'meis mitzvah hayu, rather these were people who were helping out, taking care of a body from somebody who had passed away, who had nobody else to take care of them. And then the Gemara goes into why we needed to give each of these examples. That's the statement. So what you draw from here is, again, someone's engaged in a mitzvah, they are exempt from other obligations. Clear? Those online, is that clear? Okay. Last bit of the Gemara in Source Dalet, one more source which has great ramifications for the doctor discussion. Tanya. Amar Bichananya ben Akavya. Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya says, Kosve Sfarim Tefillin Umezuzos. Sofrim. People who are writing Sifrei Torah, people who are writing Tefillin, people who are writing a mezuzah. Hain, the scribes themselves, Vitagarehen, and their merchants, Vitagare Tagarehen, and the retailers, right? Retail and middlemen and all that is not new. So you have the scribes, and then you have the salesmen, and then you have the end salesman. V'chola oskin b'melecha shamayim, and anybody involved in the work of heaven, la'asuye mochrei tcheles, which is meant to include not just people involved in the scribal arts, but people who are selling tzitzis. Peturin mikriya shma u'minatfila u'minatfilin u'mikol mitzvos ha'amuros petorah. They are exempt from Shema, they are exempt from davening, they are exempt from tefillin, and all the mitzvos. not saving a life. Again, go back to where we were before. L'kayim divar Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, and that supports Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, Shahei Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, Omer HaOsek B'mitzvah, Pater Min HaMitzvah, because Rabbi Yossi HaGlili said, you're involved in a mitzvah, you are exempt from a mitzvah. Clear? Are all of these cases that we've brought, like we've brought a bunch of cases now, we brought the person who's guarding the lost object, right? We brought the person who is involved in a mitzvah and therefore exempt from sukkah. We brought the case of the people who didn't bring the Korban Pesach because they were taking care of a body. And we also brought the case of the people who are writing tefillin and writing mezuzahs and or selling them, right? Is the tefillin merchant the same as all the other cases?
No, because it, what does that mean, all day long, every day?
Well, let's say he is. He works really hard.
I would think he has to, I don't know, unless he's meeting the quota. He works 9 to 5 like anybody else and works it out. That's what I would think.
Okay.
He never goes to shul every day of his life.
So that actually is a really important point that I wasn't going to get to here, but I will, and I'll make sure to repeat it for those online. Does that really mean, like, you could have somebody who says, well, I'm selling tefillin all day, every day, and therefore I never go to shul? I never daven? Like, could you really do that? And the answer is that would be a terrible idea. Separate from the question of what your obligations are is the question of what should your Judaism look like. This question came up, I think it was Rav Schechter who was asked this question. We have certain rules of priority for someone who's behind in davening. I start davening, the chazan is just too fast for me. So there are rules for what I skip. So, for example, you skip Yehi Chavod before Ashrei in the morning. That's one of the things you're supposed to skip. Certain passages you skip. So what if you know that in the shul that you daven in, the chazan is always faster than you? So you're never going to say Yehi Chavod? Right? Is that the result? You're just never going to say Yehi Chavod? I think the question was asked of Rav Schechter regarding Vehu Rachum. On Mondays and Thursdays, you say this very long tachanun. And you know, the chazan's faster than you, so the rule is, all right, so you jump from wherever you stopped, and that's it. You know, you get to wherever you get to. So you're never going to say the rest of the hurachim? So Rav Schechter said his strategy is that he divides it up in thirds. And this day he'll say this third, this day he'll say this third, this day he'll say that third, and that way he at least gets to cycle through it and say it at some point. And I think if you had somebody whose schedule required him to really just be involved in this all, he's got to figure out a way to somehow make time to daven. You can't live a life without davening. That's not a thing. So that's one very good question. I have a different question, though.
What's the mitzvah?
Well, are they doing a mitzvah? They're selling tefillin. They're making a living. Yes, other people will use the tefillin for a mitzvah.
Writing a sefer Torah is a mitzvah.
Writing a sefer Torah is a mitzvah, but what about these merchants? What is their mitzvah? So that's
the people.
Sorry?
They get it to the people who wouldn't otherwise have them. So without the salesman, there's no connection. The sofer's here, the buyer's there, but they can't get together without the middle.
Good. So you are correct, and we're going to see a Rashi who had the same idea. You are quite correct about that. I'm just looking on the sheet to make sure I brought it. Yeah, it's going to be Source Yad Aleph. But eventually we'll get to that, because that's going to matter. I'm going to frame it a little bit differently. Not a question of what mitzvah are they doing, but they're doing it to make a living. This is their parnasa. It's not about a mitzvah for them. It's what they do to make a living. So what if you have somebody who is in the healing profession, but they do it to put bread on the table? Is that called you're pursuing a mitzvah, or is it called you're pursuing your livelihood? Mind you, having a job, first of all, having a job is a mitzvah. Let's be clear. Supporting your family is a mitzvah. And Susan, what you're asking, can it be both, is where we're going to get back to eventually with this. But it's a question that I'm raising, because I think it's something you have to think through as part of this conversation. Clear? We're good? Okay. So the two notes on this. First of all, to be very, very clear, the exemption that comes with being involved in a mitzvah means you're exempt from, and this goes back towards what you were saying, Dina, it means you're exempt from a mitzvah's aseh, from a commandment. It does not mean that you can violate a prohibition. So you can't say, I'm watching this guy's chicken so I can eat a cheeseburger. No good. Don't do that. Don't try that at home. Don't try that in a restaurant. Don't try that anywhere. That's number one. Number two, sometimes a makeup may well be required. because you missed the mitzvah, you can't necessarily say we have to come back to it, but you can't necessarily say it's a complete and total exemption. But now I want to get to the question which has been asked repeatedly. What if you can do both? If you can do both easily, then it's a no-brainer. Yes, then do both. What if you can, but it's hard to do both? Two schools of thought. Tosfos, the Rosh as well, take the view that if you can do both, you are obligated to do both. That's the principle. The Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, disagrees. And he says, if it would require great effort, you're exempt. You don't have to push yourself to do both. If you take a look at source, hey, I brought you the Ran. I didn't bring you Tosfos because the Ran quotes Tosfos. So I figured two for the price of one in source, hey. Helu b'Tosfos, Rabbeinu Nissim says, Tosfos said, "Delo petiri elahecha she'im yekaimu mitzvah sukkah yibalu mi mitzvah seyen." He says, Tosfos says, you're only exempt if, he's talking about the sukkah case, if fulfilling sukkah would mean you couldn't do the other mitzvah. V'arminan b'gemara, and we say in the Gemara, "Derev chista v'rabba v'ravhuna ki havu aylu l'shamsa derigla l'beirish galusa havu ganu ariksa desura." We say that Rav Chista and Rabba Bar Rav Huna used to go to a special gathering to learn Torah, and they would sleep on the shores of Sura. Sura was the city where the yeshiva was. They did not have a sukkah. They had gone to learn. They were exempt from sukkah. Ve'amri, and they said, yeah, anan shluchei mitzvah, anan upatrinan. We are people who are on the way to do a mitzvah, and therefore we are exempt. B'chiyai gavna nami hu de'imitridu b'kiyu mitzvah sukkah havu mefagri mi mitzvah san. In a case like that, they are exempt because if they were to involve themselves in pursuing sukkah, the result would be that they wouldn't be able to do the mitzvah they're doing, which is trying to get to the yeshiva. So it's really one or the other. So Tosos' position is, you are only exempt if fulfilling mitzvah X prevents you from fulfilling mitzvah Y. If you can do both, Tosfos says, you have to do both. And even if it's a strain to do both. That's Tosfos. In the Ran, concluding part of source Hey, he says, "Velo nira li kein." I don't think so. De pashta de milsa lo mashma kein. He says the simple read of the Gemara is not that. The simple read of the Gemara is not that you have to push yourself to try to do both. The simple read of the Gemara is, you're exempt. That's all there is to it. Beginning, middle, and end. So it's a machlokes. Clear? So what does the Rambam think? Whenever you have a machlokes, you have to ask yourself, what does the Rambam think? So the Rambam does not quote the Tefillin passage. The business about writing the... I brought one other source that's important to note. Source Vav. This is an important Gemara for many reasons. It sort of goes back towards what Dina was saying, actually, about going your whole life without the mitzvah because you're doing you're selling tefillin every day. This is a Gemara that's on a different point, but I think its lesson is behind what a lot of us are asking here. The question they're asking is a person who is traveling and has to daven. I forget if it's talking about Shmona Esrei or Tefillas HaDerech. I think it might be Tefillas HaDerech in context. The Gemara asks, "V'hechi matzlila? How do you say this tefillah?" Rav Chista Amar Me'umad. Rav Chista says, you stop where you are, you stand, and you say it. Rav Sheshes Amar Afilu Mahalech. Rav Sheshes said no. He says, even while you are traveling, you say it. And then you get a story involving the two of them who had this debate. So Rav Chista and Rav Sheshes havu ka'azli ba'orcha. Rav Chista and Rav Sheshes were traveling together on the road. Come Rav Chista v'kamatzli. Rav Chista did what he said you should do, which is you stop where you are and you daven. Amale Rav Sheshes l'shamei. Rav Sheshes says to his servant. Rav Sheshes was blind, so Rav Sheshes says to his servant, "Maika avid Rav Chista. What's Rav Chista doing?" Amarle koyu matzli. He said he's standing and davening. Amarle okman nami lididi v'atzli. He said, have me stand and daven as well. Even though I believe that you can do it while you're walking. Why? very important principle in life. Mihyos tov al tikare ra. Literally, from being good, don't be called bad. Meaning, if you can do something a good way, then don't do it a bad way. Even if you believe that, yes, technically speaking, you're allowed to do that, why would you do that? You have a good way to do something. You have a bad way to do something. You have the option of doing it the good way. Then do it the good way. Don't claim the exemption. That's the argument. I think that's what's behind this idea that if you can fulfill both, you should. And that's why Tosfos says, even if it involves strain, go ahead and do it. And the Ran says, I don't think you have to strain in order to be able to do it. Sorry, that was just what I wanted to bring on that front. So, what is the Rambam's belief on this? So, unclear. Unclear is the best way that I could say it. The Rambam does not bring the exemption of the tefillin merchants. The Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, thinks that the reason why the Rambam doesn't bring it is because Source Ches is a Yerushalmi, which actually says that people who write Sfarim, Tefillin, and Mezuzos have to stop what they're doing for Shema. They don't have to for Shmona Esrei, because Shmona Esrei is a Derabanan. But for Shema is a Deoraisa, so they do have to stop. But the Rambam's position is really unclear, because the Rambam does invoke the idea of Osek B'mitzvah, Pater Min HaMitzvah in other cases. It's not so clear why the Rambam says this here. There's a lot to discuss about that. But when you get to the Shulchan Aruch, you find an interesting distinction. I find this to be a fascinating distinction. The Shulchan Aruch is written by two people, right? The main Shulchan Aruch is written by who? Rabbi Yosef Karo, right? From Turkey, lives in Israel, Sfat, right? The Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles, lives in Poland, in Krakow. He's the Rav of Krakow. And he writes what we usually consider the Ashkenazi part of the Shulchan Aruch. So generally speaking, we assume that the Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Karo, is going to side with the Sfardim, and the Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles in Krakow, is going to side with the Ashkenazim. That's not the way it works here. Flip it here. If you take a look at Source Tess, the Shulchan Aruch, Kosvei Tefillin and Mezuzos, the people who write Tefillin and Mezuzos, Heim v'tagareim v'tagarei tagareim, all the merchants down the line, v'chola oskim v'melech ha-shamayim, and anybody involved in the work of heaven, peturim mehanachas Tefillin kol hayom, they're exempt from putting on Tefillin all day long, zulas b'shas kriyashma u'tfila, other than when they're davening, so they're not selling things anyway, so then you might as well put on Tefillin. But otherwise, not. In other words, the position of the Shulchan Aruch is, at the time when you're doing Shema and Shmona Esrei, you're able then to fulfill both your work with your tefillin and your own mitzvah of tefillin. Therefore, you have to do both. That's the position of the
Mechaber. Because everyone else is davening,
because you're davening, yeah. Okay. Exactly. Exactly right. 100%. Yeah. Store is closed. We're davening. I'm in shul. So then I should put on tefillin. During the time of Shema and Shmona Esrei, hang in there, Susan, hold on 1 second. During the time of Shema and Shmona Esrei, you should put on tefillin. Then the Rama says, "Bim hayutzrichim lasas malachtan b'sha'as kriya Shema utfila." If they need to do their work during the time of Shema and Shmona Esrei, as peturin mikriya Shema utfila utfillin, then they're exempt from Shema, Shmona Esrei, and tefillin. He says, because anybody who's involved in a mitzvah is exempt from other mitzvos if they would need to push themselves to do the other mitzvah. And only if you can do both without any strain are you obligated to do both. You follow? So what's happening is the Rama is paskening like the Ran. He says, you're exempt unless it would involve great strain. The Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, was Spanish. The Rama is following the Sfard approach. The Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Karo, is following Tosfos. Tosfos, standard Western European stock, Germany, France, England. And yet, that's what gets adopted in the Mechaber, in Rabbi Yosef Karo. In the end, the Mishneh Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan side with the Rama. They take the view that if there's no strain, then you have to do it, but otherwise not. Clear? So far? Okay? So again, just to make sure we're clear on where we've gone, because we've done a lot of background sources. We've said that there are numerous sources indicating one who is involved in a mitzvah is exempt from a mitzvah. We've seen it with sukkah, we've seen it with tefillin, we've seen it with shema. We noted you're only exempt from a mitzvah, as I say. And we've said if you can do both, but it would involve great strain, that's subject to a machlokes. Ashkenazim follow the position of the Ramah. You do not need to do both if it involves any sort of strain. The Mechaber will want you to push a little bit. The Ramah says, no, you don't need to push. Now we come to the question of the person who's being paid to do the mitzvah. What about their standing in this? So we saw that the merchants are, in fact, exempt, even though they are being paid, right? That's also what you see in Source Yud, Gemara in Nedarim. Machzir Lois Avedaso, commenting on a particular unique case. This is the sort of thing that doesn't happen anymore, but the way the Gemara talks about it, it seems like people used to do this all the time, which is take vows as part of a fight with somebody else. Right? Today, you don't get along with somebody, so there are all sorts of fun things you can do. You can block them, you can, I don't know, all sorts of things that you can do. Probably shouldn't do half of them, so I'm not going to say them. But in the old days, you didn't like somebody, you would take a vow. And the vow was either I will not benefit them, they may not benefit from any of my property, or I will not benefit from anything of theirs. That I'm going to show them. I am not benefiting from them, or they're not benefiting from me. This is the way it was. So the question now is, there was a vow where X is not going to benefit from Y, and then, or not going to give benefit to Y, either way, and then X finds Y's chicken. Now what do? Can you return the chicken? So the Mishnah says, yes. Machzer lo avedaso. You still give him back the chicken. Now take a look at the Gemara. Pligi bar Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Asi. Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi had a debate. Chad Omar, lo shanu ela b'shenichse machzer asurin al bal aveda. He says, when do we say that you return the guy's chicken? That's specifically where the person who is returning it is not allowed to benefit the person who is receiving it back, the original owner. So we need to give them names because X and Y aren't doing it for me. So we're going to use Reuben and Shimon. Anybody here named Reuben or Shimon? No? Okay, good. So Reuben and Shimon. Shimon, Reuben is the owner of the chicken. Shimon is the one who found the chicken. So what we're saying here in the Gemara is that in the event that Shimon said, I am not going to benefit Reuven, Shimon can still return Reuven's property. Why? Because at the end of the day, he's giving him back his own chicken. Reuven owned the chicken. It's not like Shimon benefited
Hello?
Him. It was his anyway.
Good, how are you?
So that's not an issue. Aval nichse bal aveda asurin al machzir, but what if the vow was the other way? That Reuven is not going to give benefit to Shimon. In that case, you shouldn't return it. Why? Dekamahani le mi pruta de Rabbi Yosef. Because if he is going to return the lost object, if he's going to return the chicken, that means all the time that he's taking care of the chicken, he doesn't need to give tzedakah. So he is now benefiting. You follow? If Shimon is not supposed to benefit from Reuven, he shouldn't return Reuven's chicken, because by doing so, he is actually exempting himself from giving tzedakah at that time. So goes the argument. That's the idea. So the...
Can you explain that again?
I'm going to try, but it confused me too. Shimon, we're saying, should not return Reuven's chicken, because the act of returning Reuven's chicken exempts Shimon from other obligations, tzedakah specifically, and therefore he's actually benefiting by returning Reuven's chicken.
I'm sorry, I don't understand why the person whose chicken was lost doesn't benefit from getting it back.
Because, right, so Michael asks, I don't understand, why don't you say that Reuven is benefiting when his chicken is returned to him? So I'm going to say it only once with it, just because it's 8:25, and I want to make sure to get to the punchline here. But Reuven, but the answer is because Reuven is coming out even by getting his chicken back. He's not profiting. The assumption is that the chicken was still his even when it wasn't in his property, and therefore he didn't actually gain anything. He just came back to... He's made whole. Thank you.
He misses it. He's sad. He doesn't have his favorite chicken.
Right. So that's a good question. What about the emotional satisfaction of having your chicken back? Right. I don't know. Or at least, right, so the question is, what does Shimon do? Shimon sees the chicken. Shimon says, well, I vowed that I am not going to benefit from Reuven, so I can't now return his chicken. So therefore, I'm going to let the chicken run around. I mean, there is something going on between Reuven and Shimon, so I could totally see that happening. But maybe the answer is, Shimon alerts somebody else. Hey, you know, that's Reuven's chicken. I can't give it back to him because there's a thing going on between us. But, you know, it is his chicken. And you can get out of having to answer the appeal if you, you know, take the chicken into your care. But the point for us is simply that the concept of osek b'mitzvah, pater min ha-mitzvah, right? The idea that you're engaged in a mitzvah, you're exempt from another mitzvah, applies even though you are profiting. Here we're talking about the person who is returning a lost object being considered to profit by doing so, and yet they're exempt from other mitzvahs. You follow? So that's the key point. You're exempt even if you are being paid. However, Susan, I now come back to your Rashi in Source Yud Aleph. I have to admit, I didn't think we were going to get there this evening. The Rashi on the Gemara in Sukkah about the tefillin merchants. Look how Rashi describes the tefillin merchants. Halochin mehen kedei limkor ulaham tzian litzarech lahen. Who are these tefillin merchants? They buy tefillin off of the sofer, off of the scribe, in order to sell it and make it available to people who need tefillin. They are engaged in a mitzvah. Rashi seems to think the reason the merchants are exempt is because they work for Chabad. Right? They're out there trying to get people to wear tefillin. Or like the campaign for the Chayalim, right, that I sent out the other day. They're campaigning to try to get tefillin for people. That's what they're doing. It's not a for-profit thing. As Rashi reads it, they're coming out even. They want to be paid. But their goal is lishma. This is altruistic. In which case, maybe if you're not doing it to break even, you're not doing it for the mitzvah purpose. You're doing it because you want to feed your family and go skiing. So in that case, maybe you are not, in fact, exempt. So the Magen Avraham, Rabbi Avram Gambiner, author of what may be considered the main commentary to the section of Shulchan Aruch that deals with everyday life, says, I'll tell you what. It depends on what you really have in mind when you engage in this mitzvah. You know what? It's 8:29, so I'm not going to rush the Magen Avraham. We're going to pick up, God willing, next time with the Magen Avraham rather than rush it. He's going to take us into the realm of what your intentions are. We have to talk about that. And once we've done that, we can turn to the Nishmas Avraham and say, okay, so bottom line, now that we've read all these sources, how does this translate into action? There will also be a nuance, which is some mitzvos are obligatory. Becoming a doctor is not obligatory. Once you have medical training, you are obligated to use it to save people. But you are not obligated to become a doctor in the first place. Maybe that's different from returning a lost object, which is an obligation. So we're going to have to talk about that as well and how that affects things. One request, though, from everybody, those online and those in person. Hybrid classes are very hard, always. I'm doing the best I can with it. But in general, this is a new series here with a largely new audience. And any thoughts about how this works, what works better, more of the primary sources, less of the primary sources. My goal ultimately is for us to learn together, and I want to do it in the way that works best for as many people as possible. Thank you very much, everybody.